Hello and welcome to the United Stand podcast. It's episode 2 with Goldbridge and Flex. How you doing, Flex?
Yeah, I'm good, man. We're back again for another week of exclusive content on the podcast. So yeah, man, we've done really well last week.
It did really well last week, so I hope everyone's enjoying it. We've got loads and loads to talk about. It may well be the international break. We will talk about the international break, but more importantly, we want to talk about selling Lingard. Where does Rashford sit in? I've got free kicks and trannies here. I think it's meant to be free kicks in training, so that's my little clips for you there. We'll also talk about FIFA 20, the ratings there. We got something right last week. We said the Watford manager would be sacked, Flex. He was sacked, so we'll have to say who's going to be next.
Oh my God, I want to get into that each week. Mate, that could be a long old season, but we got that spot on, innit?
I tell you what, we could be the angel of death, the angels of death. You know, if we say you're going to get sacked, you're going to get sacked. But we're going to start off with Jesse Lingard. The great thing about a podcast is I'm sat here naked. Well, I'm not naked. I'm sat here in my J Ling's pants because, you know, brand wise, he's world class. I think off the pitch, Jesse Lingard, I'm not, no jokes. I think off the pitch, the lad is world class. He's brilliant. You know, he's used on every bloody bit of marketing. Everybody wants a piece of him. Superb. I saw him on YouTube last week doing something with some gamer and everything. Absolutely brilliant. On the pitch, he is terrible. Absolutely terrible. We put a poll out on the United Stand, I think, 2 days ago, basically saying, what is Jesse Lingard's future at Manchester United? And the three options were sell him, first teamer, or bench player. Now, before I give you the results of that, what are your thoughts on Lingard? Because it's been 2 years now, and he's just simply not good enough. Adam Johnson's been in prison for how many years, and he's got better stats than Lingard. You know, these are all true things.
They are all true things, man. At the end of the day with Jesse Lingard, stats aren't everything, but in his case, they do prove a lot. They do prove a lot, man. Like, at the end of the day, Jesse Lingard is a squad player. He's a squad player at best. He's brilliant, like you said, off the field. He's got his marketing down to a T, and when he retires from football, he's got it spot on. Like, he's got things to go into. He's got successful businesses and clothing brands. That's great. But right now, you're a current footballer at Manchester United, and he doesn't offer enough, man. And in terms of his imminent future at Man United, I think it's bright for him because Ollie trusts him. Ollie rates him. And that is more of a concern to all of us. The fact that we can see that his output's not great, and yes, he might run around, he's got a good set of lungs and he picks up intelligent positions, but he's not effective in that. And you know, I think the mere fact that he still gets in the England team as well means that, you know, Gareth Southgate is his favourite. He likes him. He's done a job for him, so he will always pick him. But you know, we were saying on the Flex and Ranch show the other day, Mason Mount will overtake him. Madison will overtake him. These guys will slowly overtake him. So Jesse's going to have to count his lucky stars that he's still in there. It's only going to be a matter of time before these guys get more productive than him. But for our team, as long as he's not bringing in Gomez or we don't go and buy a number 10, it looks like Ollie's going to keep persisting to play him in that position or in and around the first team or first 11. So it's a worry for me, man, because look, I'm not slagging off Jesse, I'm just saying what he is and his attributes. If your attributes are fitness and running and picking up good positions, then that just tells you everything about him, doesn't it?
It does. And just to read out the stats, we had over 10,000 votes on Twitter for this. 3% of 10,000 United fans said he was a first teamer. I mean, that's shocking.
Wow.
3%. Yeah. 53% said a bench player, which is what you've said.
Yeah.
And 44% said sell him. I mean, that, if look, Manchester United probably don't take notice of fan opinion. Hopefully they do. Maybe they don't. Maybe Ollie doesn't give a shit. I don't know. But to be honest with you, I think, you know, if you put a pair of trainers out or you put a t-shirt out and people buy it or they say it's crap on TripAdvisor or whatever, or however they review clothes these days, you've got a problem. And Manchester United probably need to open their eyes up to that, because when only 3% are saying he's a first teamer, but he's playing nearly every week, you got a problem there. I think from my point of view with Lingard, I would agree with you. I think he's a bench player. I wouldn't sell him because, look, people get lost in this. I don't have a problem with criticism of a player, and I'm more than happy to say if Martial plays against Leicester at the weekend, misses a load of sitters, I will say he's shit. He's my favourite player, but I will say he's shit because that's what fan opinion is. That's what we're passionate about. But with Lingard, I don't want to sell him. I don't want to sell him. I think if someone offered us 50 million, I'd do it. But he's come through the youth setup. He's from Manchester. I think there is an important. I think too much weight is put on that, but I think there is an importance to that. And I think he is an energetic player that in the last 20 minutes of a game probably would pick up more goals and assists than he does starting games because he is got that energy. So I just think he's got to bench him. But then we move into the bigger problem. And so there's the result, you know, Flex and me saying bench him. I don't know what you lot think at home.
Yeah.
But to be fair, if you think sell him, 44% agree with you. If you think first teamer, you're in the minority people. You're 3%. This is pretty damning. But another interesting stat I saw about Manchester United today, which we did tweet out as well, was they basically ranked the top, well, I've done seven, there was 10, seven clubs in the world and ranked them on their value of their squad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Man City are top, their team is worth just over $1 billion. PSG are second with 913 million. This is in euros. Real Madrid are third with 902 million. Manchester United are fourth in the world with a valued squad of 751 million.
Madness.
Then it's Juventus, then it's Barcelona, then it's Liverpool. All of those clubs in the last 2 years have either won a domestic title or the European Cup. Manchester United haven't won it in six, and we are fourth in the most valued squad. And I basically said someone's got to be sacked for that. It's disgusting.
Mm. No one's taken any accountability, and that is the problem. The structure since Sir Alex Ferguson has left, even arguably when he was there, really, probably wasn't the best, but he carried the ship. He had so much influence and so much power. The actual structure wasn't there or wasn't built to be sustainable after he left. And I know we might touch on Sir Alex and some of the comments people have been making towards him, but he was part of that process of looking at of the structure and how the club was going to move on after he left. And it wasn't left in good shape. It's not all down to Sir Alex. But the people that have continued to hold that ship since then have been atrocious. You look at the decisions we've made, not just with managers, just recruitment and the money we've flashed about, which is why am I shocked to see that our squad is the fourth most richest squad or cost the most to assemble. No, I'm not. I'm not surprised to see that at all. But look at the results that we've had from that. We've been nowhere near a league title in that time. We've won a couple of second-rate trophies. But other than that, we haven't done anything. And we've just been rebuild after rebuild. And now we're in another flipping rebuild. So it just shows, like you're saying, where someone has to be sacked. There's been no accountability. There's been no change at that level. And Gary Neville did say it, I think it was a few months back, when he said, there's people there at that football club where if this continues, like it shouldn't have happened already, people need to, you know, Ed Woodward should step aside. People above him should step aside because you're like, well, you guys are in charge of this element of the football club and it is failing. All these managers can't keep coming in. All these players can't keep coming in. Let's look upstairs. That is where the real problem is. And that's when you start getting into the decisions that the owners are making and that the board are making. So absolutely, it does not surprise me one bit that stat is present.
I think it's disgusting. I mean, just for people who didn't really quite listen to it. So Manchester United are ranked fourth in the world for the current value of their squad. That's current. This isn't players we've sold. This isn't including people like, you know, I'm trying to think who we've sold for decent money. So your Daily Blinds and your that Memphis. This is the value of the current squad. Yeah, it will include Lukaku and Sanchez, I would imagine, because they are still currently part of the squad. But to have us fourth in the world with the value of our squad, ahead of Juventus, ahead of Barcelona, ahead of Liverpool, and yet we are failing as much as we are. And I saw some people on Twitter saying, well, people have been sacked. Three managers have been sacked. But all three of those managers have said they didn't get the players that they wanted. The consistent theme is, in relation to that spend, the people who bought those players are still at the football club now. It's still the same director of football, whoever that is, because we haven't got one. It's the same people buying the players. And if I was the Glazers looking at that, if the board weren't my best mates making me so much bloody money, I would say, from a footballing point of view, you're all fired. You're absolutely... That is a disgrace. That is embarrassing. And this is the problem with Manchester United. It is just an embarrassment in relation to how badly we are run at the moment. And I spoke to somebody yesterday who told me that they were up at Carrington the end of last season. And when they used to be at Carrington, you'd walk around and all the rooms would be full, you know, presumably with scouts and everything like that. And loads of the offices are just empty now. He said it's like the club's running down and it's a shell of its former self. And I mean, this is not surprising, like you said, but it is worrying. but it's not something we don't expect. But look, let's bring it into the international break for a moment, because I want to sort of touch on Rashford and Daniel James and where how we play on Saturday against Leicester. But another damning thing really is that I said after the Spurs-Arsenal game, what a great player I think Guendouzi is for his age. I really like his energy. It, you know, doesn't surprise me that Arsenal fans don't appreciate him because they're flip-flops. But I looked at him and I went, if we had him in our midfield, we would be screaming we've got one of the best young players in the world for that position. We've got Scott McTominay, who did okay for Scotland last night against Belgium. But De Bruyne absolutely annoyed.
Yes, it's De Bruyne, isn't it? Yeah.
But I don't think Scott McTominay is that good. I think he's okay and I think he's going to have a good season. But I think he falls into the same category as Rashford and Lingard. And this persistence with youth, but the reality is we've not produced even a top-class player from our youth for nearly 30 years. The class of 92, well, all right, that was the mid-90s when they came through. But let's say well over 20 years. It worries me, Flex, to be honest. It worries me. I think McTominay could be a good squad player. We've just said that Lingard's a bench player. Rashford, we're going to talk about him in a minute because really he probably is a bench player at the moment. Ollie's trying to force these players into a team and make us a top four team. And I looked at that the midfields yesterday and I was like, well, Chelsea have got Kovacic, they've got Mount, they've got Kante, they've got Jorginho, they've got Barkley. Arsenal have got Guendouzi, Torreira, Xhaka, Ceballos.
Well, not Xhaka because he's shit.
Yeah, but I'd still take Xhaka over McTominay, I'm sorry.
I don't know.
No, I genuinely would.
And, I don't know, man.
But Xhaka what I'm is saying shit. Is our midfield is crap, and yeah, until proven otherwise. Yeah. I know McTominay could come good, and this is not me slating McTominay.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, as of now,
we are
chucking players in and hoping, and I think this is part of the problem.
Absolutely. I agree with that in terms of, do you know what it is, yeah? With the players that are being rammed down our throat, yeah? We're almost being forced to accept that these players are good enough when at face value, just by looking at them and just by having to support them because they're in our starting 11. Because no matter what happens, when you turn up to a game or you're watching the game, you want the players that are on your team to score, to do well. Not even just to score, but to play well. Even though Lukaku was doing crap and Sanchez was doing crap when they played, you wanted them to score. You wanted it to come good. But then there comes a point, and I know it's a bit different with those two because they've got track records, but there comes a point where as a football fan, depending on what type of football fan you are, it doesn't matter about the sentiment. It doesn't matter about what player's being rammed down your throat that you have to support. When you look at it holistically and in its whole entirety, you can see that these players that are being championed to us are average players. And you got to look at what we're comparing it to. You've got to look, we're actually comparing McTominay to Matic. So that is the reason why we've decided that he's good or he's okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's almost like we need to, I agree. It's like we need to look out. And my question in a bad way was going to be, how does Scott McTominay, how does Fred, how does Pereira, how does Matic measure up? No, let's forget Liverpool and Man City's midfield. I didn't mention them on purpose, but I just mentioned all the Chelsea midfielders, the Arsenal midfielders.
Leicester.
I've got loads.
Do you know what I mean? And that is it.
Leicester's probably better, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. That Leicester is better. Like, if you look at Leicester's midfield, which I know we're going to talk about Leicester later on in this show, but Ndidi, Choudhury, Maddison, and Tielemans. Like, come on. It's only Pogba. Against all the midfields we play against, within reason, in the top 10, it's only Pogba that brings our midfield up. Like I keep saying, Pogba will be the difference between our midfield going up half a star on FIFA, which we'll talk about later, to if you took him out of our whole team, our star would drop down in midfield. Or do you know what I mean? Our rating would go down in midfield, should I say. But that is it. So we're being, you know, the likes of Fred, the likes of Andreas and stuff. I think these players are okay. Fred, I think there's a player in there, to be fair. There's a reason why Man City wanted him. I think I've seen him play in Champions League games and he showed that he can do it in games. I just don't know why we're not giving him a sustained period of time in the first team. But back to the others, it's just we're just championing average players, or we're being made to do that. And the wool's not being pulled over our eyes anymore, man. People are starting to wake up and say, hang on a minute. But where would this guy be compared to Scholes? Where would this guy be compared to Carrick? Who would this
that
be compared to Beckham?
That always should be the bar.
Do you know what I'm saying? And that should be the bar. Like, even with the fullback situation, look at the Luke Shaw thing. It's kind of like, Yeah. Like, Luke Shaw was all right, and I know you've got your your thoughts on Luke Shaw. But what we're seeing is now we've got a proper right back. It's like, oh, actually, we're looking at Luke Shaw's side and thinking, oh, bloody hell, Wan-Bissaka's bombing down that side. That's what we want on the other side. It highlights things. Victor Lindelof, we were like, he's the best centre back at the club. Obviously, now we've got Harry Maguire, but we were comparing him to Smalling and Jones. So, and now there's
I even heard people with Lindelof and Maguire and saying, you know, oh yeah, we finally got a new Rio and Vidic.
There you go.
To be fair to Lindelof and Shaw, because obviously I'm a defender of Shaw, they're just not problems to solve yet.
No,
I totally agree that they might be problems. And when I start saying to Rance, I'll leave Luke Shaw alone in the bullet. It's not because I disagree that I actually do think Luke Shaw's a good player and he can be. And that's obviously my personal opinion. But yeah. I can see why people don't rate him.
Yeah.
But he's far from the issue at the moment. I mean, as we all know, that midfield needs probably three midfielders with Pogba going next summer as well. That's the glaring issue. So that's why I don't focus on left back, but you're right.
And that is the biggest problem, yeah. Looking at areas of need and prioritisation, yeah. Because we've been so crap at right back, at centre back, in central midfield, not scoring enough goals as well at the top end of the pitch, we overlook the other smaller little problems. Do you know what I'm saying? It's the kind of like, well, I've got a leak in the house. Well, fucking hell, mate, the roof's about to cave in. Let's do that before we get a new boiler. Let's do that before we paint the hallway. So that
good analogy.
I understand.
Easy,
yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. But that's what it's like, isn't it? So you take your eye off the ball with other stuff, and then you have to plug the holes. So for me, Ollie championing these average players, I don't know. I still don't know whether it's because Ollie hasn't got the players he wanted because the club are going, look, we're not going to buy XYZ. You're going to have to work with this, and this. Or whether Ollie and this whole old school mentality with McFeeling and Carrick and McKenna is, no. We've got players like Jesse and Marcus and Scott. They're good enough to go forward. And do you know what? I swing towards the latter, if I'm honest, because otherwise you're just lying.
If, and I said this last night as well, if I found out that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said we didn't need a midfielder in the summer, let's go with what we've got. He needs to be sacked. Sorry. I know it's podcast and we can say what we want, but I would say what you're saying there. If the coaching staff think that Lingard, Rashford and McTominay are good enough, we don't need to buy anyone, you're going to get sacked. You know, I don't care what a great legend you are, you're going to get sacked. I don't care what people say about me. I will say what I think as a United fan. You're going to get sacked. You're a bloody idiot.
It will end in tears. It will. Because the game's moved on too far from then, my lad. People talk about Sir Alex won a league with like Cleverley and Gibson and these kind of men and Anderson and that, yeah. But he couldn't do that now. He could not do that now. And he oozed every last little bit of oomph out of that squad that we had. Because that squad that we had when we won the league, yeah. Like in the last time we won it with is Van Persie was the difference, and well, we had loads of aging players and players that just were just not that good, to be honest. Even then, so it was only someone like Sir Alex.
You could literally say in them days 85, 87 points will win you a title.
Exactly.
Liverpool last year found out that 97 points doesn't win you a title.
Exactly.
So,
you know. So this whole McTominay Pereira thing, it's just average, man. It's just average. That's the problem.
Our team is average. Where we need to be. We're an average team and you know, it all starts on Saturday.
That's it.
Against Leicester. And if we lose to Leicester, we will be mid-table on Saturday evening, 6 points behind Leicester, which is a big, big gap. Oof. I want to talk about Rashford for a moment. I saw yesterday, and I've got it now, it does say free kicks in training, not free kicks in tranny. And I've seen this twice. It's almost like England are doing Manchester United's job with Rashford. They're trying to promote brand Rashford, because I think it was last Friday or midweek last week, I saw a clip from the England Twitter account of Marcus Rashford heading two headers in from 6 yards out. Mm. Yesterday, they put a clip out of him scoring two free kicks in a row. And I was like, look, I think anybody who's ever played football, I couldn't give a shit about what happens on the training pitch. You know, it's the biggest cliche ever. You should see the goals they're scoring in training. It's irrelevant. There's no pressure. You're playing with your mates. You try things you'd never do on a pitch. I don't really care. But it probably explains why Rashford's on free kicks if he's scoring in training. But we all know what Rashford's free kicks are like in the real game. And air traffic control need to be informed because he's terrible. But with Rashford, Dan James scored again for Wales. I don't really put a lot of weight on international football. I never have. But what it does do, it just shows he's very, very confident. Very, very good goal as well. Again, off that left-hand side. If Martial's fit, he's head and shoulders above Rashford as a number nine. Yeah. So as we approach this Leicester game, we spoke about this on the phone yesterday, didn't we? You know, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Rashford, because I think if we hadn't had the international break, there'd be a big clamour from you, the United fans, to drop Rashford because he deserves to be dropped. The Southampton game was atrocious. But that absence makes the heart grow stronger, may help him. What I would say, though, is what happens with Rashford against Leicester? Because you can't play him up front.
No.
It's got to be Martial.
Yeah,
and I don't want to see Daniel James being put out to the right so that Rashford can play on the left, because Daniel James is devastating at the moment, and it would be so unfair for a young player who's new to the Premier League to get shifted to the right to accommodate Rashford, who's playing crap.
Yeah, there's two things to this, yeah? The first thing is that our manager loves Rashford.
Rashy.
Loves him. Absolutely loves him. So from that alone, I will categorically, I would almost lay my house on it that Rashford starts that game. Two, because we haven't got other options, we know we do in terms of maybe give Mason Greenwood a start, but we know that's not going to happen. So let's not even discuss that, because that's frustrating, but we know, but it's not going to happen. So let's not talk about it, yeah? If you think about it, Lingard's been terrible as well. So realistically, he should just put Rashford on the right.
Yeah.
Which he's not great there anyway, and he's been in bad form. But it's either that or put in Mason Greenwood, which we know he's not going to do, or put in Jesse Lingard. And I'd rather Rashford on the right than Jesse Lingard. At least Rashford can go past people and is quick. And as much as his shooting boots haven't been on so far, I think he'll bring more to the game, especially against Leicester, where we need to be quick on a counter, because I think they could have a lot of the ball. And you know, even though they play counter-attacking themselves, they've got a midfield that's better than ours and they could easily win the midfield battle. So for me, we have to see. This is going to be a big test for Ollie, a message to the fans. If he puts Daniel James on the right, that means he's got clear favourites and he's not picking fuck all on form, to me. He's not. That's
I'd be really angry.
I'll be fuming. And what message as well does that send to Daniel James, who's got three goals in four games, five if you want to include an international friendly for himself, for his own personal tally for the season. Yeah, so he's played five, he's scored four goals, isn't he? Yeah, in his own personal tally. He's playing well for Manchester United. A lot of Man United fans have said that they see him as he should be an impact player. They said he shouldn't even be starting games, and now he's our most consistent performer. Yes, this could be a purple patch. Dan James could go another 9 games, 10 games from now and not score. But right now, he's actually our most potent threat. He is. It's a fact. And against Leicester, we're going to need someone who is in form, who is confident, who is backing themselves to score right now, and has got a good head on their shoulders. So for me, in their favoured position, where they've been doing it from. So for me, Dan James has to start on the left. Like you said, if Martial's fit, he has to start up front. We know that. And Rashford has got to be on the right. If he's not going to play Rashford on the right, then don't play him. Because if we see him on the left, then it is a massive kick in the teeth to not only James, but the fans.
And I think with Dan James as well, it's like, I'm not going to say I watched Swansea last season, but like a lot of people said, he's a left winger, that's where he plays best, you know, he can use both feet. I saw him on the right hand side for United a couple of times. He did get goals, but I thought, I'm not that impressed with him really. He works hard, but since he's been on the left, I know it was only one game against Southampton, but he just looks a different player. The ball, the quality of the crosses coming in. He's better off the left-hand side. You play your players in your best positions, and whatever Ollie thinks about Rashy is underperforming at the moment. So put your form players in their best position, and it may, you know, and put Rashford on the right. I would agree, and I must just say I like Rashford. I do like Rashford. I don't like what he's become. I don't know why he's become what he's come. But Rashford's always been one of my favourite players because he encapsulates what Manchester United should be. He is somebody from the youth who is exciting. But something's gone wrong, and I don't know what it is, and it's unfair to speculate, but I don't know what it is. Is it he thinks he's made it before he has? I don't know. You see him putting the work in on the training ground.
I don't see that.
Not as good as we hope it's going to be.
It's that. On Rashford, yeah, let me just get my views out on Rashford and just, this is exactly what I think about Rashford, yeah. Rashford is a good player. He's a good player. I don't think he's like Marcus Rashford and he's terrible and I think he's a good player, yeah. But the problem is that he's not going to be world class. He's not going to be Mbappe level. He's not going to get 20 goals, 25 goals a season. I see Rashford as just a generic forward.
Just let me jump in here then, because I think people will find this interesting. So if we do it based on Manchester United, and I know you'll remember a lot of these strikers, where does Rashford rank? And I'll start off with a few crap ones all the way through to the good ones. So where does Rashford rank in this list? And I'll probably do about five or six. So Makeda, Danny Welbeck, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Andy Cole, Van Nistelrooy.
Right, stop there. There's no point mentioning the rest. They're all better than him. So
I've done five.
It was between
Makeda, Welbeck.
Right, he's between there.
Solskjaer, Cole, and Van Nistelrooy.
He's between Welbeck and Solskjaer.
Yeah,
that's where he is. No higher than that. He hasn't proved it yet. The reason why I say he's better than Welbeck is
he's got to be better than Welbeck. Exactly. I'll never forgive him running through one on one against Bayern Munich and fucking trying to chip Neuer and just giving him catching practice.
But in terms of prolificness, and that, so far, you can't really... He's not miles better than Welbeck. He's not. That's why I'm saying he's between that and Ollie. Ollie, super sub, very natural finisher, clinical finisher. So he probably got that over Marcus. But Rashford's got more physical attributes in terms of being able to beat people. He's quicker, he's sharper. But in terms of, again, technical ability, Ollie's better than him. Ollie's better finishing him. We've seen it. That's why he lies between Welbeck and Solskjaer, sort of below Solskjaer, just above Welbeck. And it's that until we see otherwise. I think, don't get me wrong, he is in a very, very bad run of form. Very bad run of form. He's been bad for the best part of... Is 9 months too much to say? Is that too long?
I would say...
Six?
I would say... From end of January, because he did score that goal against Spurs, didn't he? Which was good, and he was a big part.
Because he was in a good bit of form last season, then it just tailed off after PSG.
I think him and Lingard replicate each other. They've been awful since February.
Yeah, so there you go. So that is quite a long time to be in a bad run of form. For me, a bad run of form is five or six games, then you get a goal, and then you get yourself going again. Do you know what I mean? As a forward. Or you're contributing heavily, you're part of attacks, you're getting assists and stuff like that, or you're occupying defenders, your link-up play is good. And we're just not seeing that from him. I think he is in a bit of a rut. I think if he believes in himself, so I don't question his mentality. I don't see a player that isn't trying. I don't see a player that probably isn't working hard in training and thinks he's made it and isn't and has given up and has got cars and money and doesn't care. I don't see him as that. Yes, he's got a little bit more flashy with a few chains and stuff like that, but I don't judge footballers on that. That's their lifestyle. They make enough money to do that. I don't give a shit. I judge it by the output I'm seeing on the pitch, and I'm seeing someone actually trying too hard. I'm seeing someone who is letting this bad form actually get to them. And in terms of the name Rashford, he's actually being very rash right now. He's making rash decisions on the pitch. Incorrect decisions on the pitch. He's not being patient. He's not being, tactically aware of what's going on around him. So for me, he's better than what he's showing, but he's still not going to be world class. So I'm not in this camp of sell Rashford. He's never going to be anything good. I'm just saying he's never going to be world class, but that doesn't mean he can't be a good player for Manchester United in terms of, squad. Start some games, come off the bench some games. That's the situation we should be in with Rashford. But what we did do, which was wrong, again, hierarchy thing, we let him have half a good season when he first come in, and then this is his fourth season in top flight, give him the number 10 shirt, give him a bumper contract, and made him the poster boy. Put all the hopes and dreams on his shoulders. So that's our fault. Not us as fans, but the board and the managers picking him. The Yes showed belief in the kid. But I think it was too quick, man. And he found himself in a position where it was eating him up, and he's not ready for that yet.
Look, I would agree on that. I think that it's an interesting theory to bring it back to the club, because I think the club are culpable. You could compare that with Lingard. Every time there's a kit launch, Lingard's there.
Yeah.
Giving the number 10 to Rashford. Keeping Paul Pogba when it doesn't really make sense to keep a player who doesn't want to be here. when you could sell him and bring two midfielders in, but then he's massively marketable. I think United make really poor decisions that impact on players' mentality. And, you know, Lingard and Rashford, can you forgive them for thinking they've made it when United are blowing wind up their arse all the time? Can you forgive people like De Gea and Herrera getting disillusioned with the club when their contracts are being run down? And Fellaini moaned about it as well. So I think the club make business decisions that don't actually help us out on the pitch, if I'm honest with you. But let's move it on to the... what was I going to talk about next? The Leicester game. Let's briefly just touch on that for a moment. I obviously I'm going to talk about it later in the week. We're going to do previews and things. But my initial thought at the moment, with absolutely no real theory behind it, is I've just got a hunch we're going to find a result. And I don't know. I don't mean we're going to play brilliantly. I just think we'll find a result. The one I don't want. I don't want a draw.
I think it will be a draw.
A draw is such a nothing result.
Awful result. Yeah, yeah. I think it will be a draw. I predicted in the Flex and Rant show it will be a draw. And I stick by that, man. I'd love to be proved wrong. Whenever you predict that your team might lose or you've got a bad feeling they will, or you predict they're going to draw, it's not for the want of winning. I want us to win the game. But I just think the way we're playing right now, I look at Leicester, tactically brilliant. Brendan Rodgers is a good manager. He's got young players there who he can definitely improve, who he started to improve already. They look set in their way of how they want to play already. You saw what they did to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. They should have won. I'm not saying that that's definitely going to happen, but they've got the ability to play and create chances. Maddison in the 10, or even if he plays off the left, and they go over midfield three of Ndidi, Tielemans and Choudhury, it's solid. That is a solid midfield three, man. And we could get given a runaround. So we our best weapon, which is our counter-attack, could be massive in this game. Although they like to play counter-attacking football as well. So I think it'll be a mixture. I think it'll be an up-and-down game. I think there'll be moments where we see a lot of the ball because Leicester are looking to pounce. And there'll be moments where their midfield is just better than ours and they just overrun us and get a lot of space in behind for Vardy. So I think it'll be a draw. To God, we win the game. We need to win the game, but I've just got a bad feeling it's going to be a draw, man.
I think we'll nick it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I just think we will. Funny enough, I'm just actually on my phone while we're talking away because there's people sort of releasing FIFA 20 player ratings for some United players. Which actually, let me just go through that. But obviously, we had the top 100 yesterday.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people don't play FIFA. You know, there's that big debate about whether you...
Sorry, mate, my door's just gone, mate. My door, keep going. I'm listening.
So you've got that debate about whether, you know, you go Pro Evo this year because they've got the licence for Manchester United or you stick with FIFA 20. Oh, Goldbridges, don't worry, Goldbridges already nailed his flag to the mast. I'm sticking with FIFA 20. The FIFA rants will still be going. But they did release their pictures yesterday. Not their pictures. They did release their ratings yesterday, the top 100 ratings. And as I understand it, I think Messi was 94, Ronaldo was 93, Neymar was 92, and I think
Hazard 91.
If I remember correctly. So Messi's finally, I don't know whether he's number one last year or whether they shared the rating last year, but for me, I love Ronaldo. I love winding up Messi fans, but I think this... if this is the first year where Messi is ranked higher than Ronaldo, I think that's right. I do. I think Messi's still in his prime years. And I think... well, maybe...
yeah, but it's just that good.
He's into his 30s, I think. But Ronaldo is nearly... Ronaldo's nearly mid-30s now. So, and he's having to adjust his game every season. So, yeah, I think it's right. I think they've got that right with Messi.
I think so. He just... look, the Messi and Ronaldo debate will just go on for absolute years. And to be honest, I change my mind every week. If I'm honest, I'm the biggest flip-flop. I am the biggest flip-flop when it comes to Messi and Ronaldo. I will admit that. I always love to say Ronaldo because obviously we've got more attachment to him and he's been fantastic for Manchester United in those years. And I love that he's gone to different countries and proved his gravy, done it at international level, which is why I always lean more towards Ronaldo, if I'm honest. But the things that Messi does, man, you can't look at that and think this guy's not probably the best player ever. Like, do you know what I mean? The things he does with a football. he's just unbelievable. And if you like, it depends what type of football you like. If you like that skill and craft and guile and acuteness and subtleness, then Messi's your guy. If you love that big, powerful athlete, you know, physique and power and stuff like that, then Ronaldo's your guy. They're both sensational, and I just think really we should just draw a line under it and say they're both the best. But I get it, that there can only be one best in people's heads. So, but for FIFA, yeah, and it's only one 94-93, it's the same bloody thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Are you going, do you know what?
I'm contemplating as I speak now. I've got the Pro Evolution downloading the demo because a lot of people said play it because I've seen the graphics. The graphics look great, but the newer Pro Evos, the graphics have always looked good, but then the gameplay is shit. The gameplay is just janky. And people were saying to me yesterday, "Oh yeah, it's really good and stuff like that." I will give it a go. I will test it out. But the problem is that I can't be fucking bothered to do Master Leagues and see flipping West London blue and shit like that. I can't. I'm just turning 19, man. I want. Yeah, they've got about five kits on there, five teams. And someone said, I think it was Lee Chappie, said, "Oh, you can download patches and shit like that." Mate, this is 2019. I'm not going down Wembley Market getting a chip PlayStation on the memory card and that, and then flipping trying to download it.
I think you can do it quite easy on PS4. I must defend it. I think
what to get all the kits.
I think it is quite easy to do. I must just say, I'm not going to do it though because
it's just long.
What annoys me about it is I know FIFA's out next week if you get it on early access, and I know the demo's out today, so I ain't getting Pro Evo because it will. I used to like Pro Evo, but I also remember probably in the early noughties.
Yeah, I used to get both FIFA game
and a Pro Evo game. Yeah. And it messes my head up because they are slightly different. The buttons are slightly different, and it plays different. So look, I just think I will go with FIFA. If it's absolutely atrocious,
but you see, FIFA is like, even if it's atrocious, yeah, you still play it. You know why? Because it's socially acceptable and everyone else is on it. And the online features are way better, in my opinion. The vault of things like FIFA Street. Yeah, exactly. It looks brilliant. And you're going to hear Flipping Troops' voice all over it. So you know, I said to him, I'll play it on mute.
This is not DT.
But, you know, FIFA is like that shot that you don't want to do, but again, it's socially acceptable. Everyone does it. It's like a shot of Sambuca. I hate Sambuca. Can't do it. But if I'm out and everyone's doing it, and that's what the in thing is, that's what I'll have, you know? So we can moan about the gameplay on FIFA and scumbag things happen. I see your FIFA videos and you get robbed. It hits the post and the crossbar don't go in. There's little things where you think, oh, the computer's just mugging me off here. But we're still back every year. And just to finish off, yeah, I'm sorry, I know you shouldn't look too much into this, I'm not being disrespectful, I'm not. Well, I am. You look at the cover of PES, yeah, don't get me wrong, alright, they've got Messi, but they've got Pat Pienic, which, alright, he's a good player, Serge Gnabry and Scott McTominay.
It says Poundland that, FIFA straight away.
Like it's Lidl.
Well, not even Poundland. It says
it's Netto, which ain't even in business FIFA anymore, mate. It's Netto. Like, that's mad. I know you shouldn't judge it off that. And like I said, I'm downloading the demo as it is. But for me, yeah, it's gonna be FIFA. What buttons do you use? Are you like, do you have square to shoot, circle to shoot? What did you have? Because I have an argument with people about this.
I've got my controller here next to me. Let me just think. So, yeah, square is my lob shot.
Oh, so you're new school.
X is my pass.
New school, mate. You're new school. So I do the old school pro buttons, mate. So if you finesse a shot, yeah? You know when you do finesse shot?
Yeah.
What button do you press to finesse?
I think it's... Is it? I don't know. I'd have to be playing.
Yeah, mine's R2.
It's R1 or R2, isn't it?
Is your R1... My R1 sprint. What's your sprint? Yeah, so you're old school, mate. RT's you're old sprint. School. Oh, I just got the old school pro buttons, mate. I always change it. Square.
Yeah. So you're going to... The interesting thing about that the Pro Evo thing there actually just reminds me, that's the good thing about this, is I read yesterday Pro Evo said why they'd put McTominay on the front. Because they could have chosen a few players from United. Obviously, they've got the licence. And they went with McTominay... not for any other reason than that they spoke with United, they spoke about the vision of United, and McTominay is a potential future captain of Manchester United.
Go.
It goes back to what we were on about, or you were on about, that The club's vision is to go with these players. Now, if it works, great. But if they're not ever going to be good enough, I'm sorry, we're in for a horrible ride, because you're only in the hands of the judgment of the coaches. And if those coaches have got poor judgment because they're not good, we're going to fail. I just hope that Scott McTominay does turn into one of the world's best midfielders and a future Manchester United captain. But as I've always said, I don't see it at the moment. I still don't see it now. I still think at 23 in December.
No, it's not. It's not, Mark. It's not. There's no point even. That's a bit rude. I don't want to say there's no point hoping, but Scott McTominay. Yeah, if we had two world class midfielders around him, and then three world class forwards, I think he could probably do all right. But the fact that he's in an average team and he's an average player himself. I just feel that there's the longevity just won't be good enough. I think he's an okay player. I think he's got he's mobile. I think he's actually a little bit better on the ball than we give him credit for. Against Southampton, when we scored that goal, the ball was fed into him and it looked like a simple pass, but he was aware of what was around him to feed it out to Daniel James and keep the move ticking over. So he doesn't want to dwell on the ball and take too many touches. He does want the ball. I've seen him, I watch him a lot, and he does come and collect the ball. He does want it, he doesn't shy away from it. And he can put it about a bit. He's decent in the air, can win some headers, and he's decent at positional-wise, to interceptions as well. I was watching Danny Higginbottom dissect our game against Southampton on Sky, I don't know if you saw it. And he did pick out quite a few Scott McTominay moments because he was talking about him. I mean, he probably hyped him up a bit too much because he said, I think he's going to be an excellent player for Manchester United in the future. But he did pick out good spatial awareness and good positioning from McTominay, where he did stop attacks and block shots. And so I'm not going to completely diss him, because I do think he's an okay player. But he just, levels, when it comes to levels, playing against top midfields, it's not going to be good enough, man.
I sympathise with McTominay. I tweeted this last night. He's in his development years, and he's constant where everywhere he looks is playing
exactly.
Shit, whether it's United's midfield or Scotland's. So it doesn't help his development, and that is an important part of any player's development, is who you've got playing around you. But pure talent should come through, and I just don't. I think he's okay, and I hope he comes good. I really do. But just on the Danny Higginbotham thing, a little bit. I'm sure a lot of people realise this. In a 90-minute game, if you are analysing it, you will find four or five minutes where something does somebody right. You know, I could watch Ashley Young's crappiest game last season, and there was plenty, but I guarantee I'd find you 2 minutes of bits where he does something right, even if just throwing
taking a throw.
You can always manipulate an agenda with any player, and fanboys will do that, and fangirls. Let's be equality here. So look, I think McTominay's played well against Chelsea. He did okay against Southampton, but Wolves and Palace, I thought he was really poor. But that's the inconsistency of an inconsistent player. Right, let's do who's going to get the sack next. If you didn't listen to the podcast last week, we did bring this in. We sort of predicted who was going to win the league, who was going to be top scorer, who would win the Champions League, and we did predict the first sacking, because a lot of people feel that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will be sacked before Christmas. Well, we didn't go with Ollie. We both went with the Watford manager, and within a couple of days he was sacked. So we've got one right there. So we may as well go again with who will be the next Premier League.
No, it won't be Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think it's out of two for me. I think it will be Steve Bruce, because they went on a little. All right, they beat Spurs, and what did they do after that? I can't remember. Did they draw after that? I think they drew. But I just feel he'll get undone at some stage. It's just Newcastle. They've done all right there, but that doesn't hide the fact that the fans didn't want Bruce in. They're still angry at Mike Ashley, and I just feel that Newcastle's that team that always has the potential to just go to shit within a few games. So for me, I think Steve Bruce or the Brighton manager. I think it's Potter, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? They're the two I thought, so I'm not even just being lazy. I nearly went Newcastle because I think that, you're right, Steve Bruce, they didn't want him. But I actually think Newcastle will do okay. I mean, the bottom three at the moment, they're not there.
Yeah.
It's Watford, Norwich, and Villa. But obviously Watford have already sacked their manager. There's no question they might sack the next one, but I think Watford have got a good enough team to start going on a good run. I think Norwich, Villa and Sheffield United, if they've got any sense, yeah, exactly, will just think, look, we're newly promoted, we shouldn't be sacking managers. So Brighton are 60. I'm going to go with the Brighton manager. I think I predicted them to get relegated. I don't think they should have sacked Chris Hughton anyway, and I think they will panic the worst that they get. And the interesting thing about Brighton is, if you look at their next few fixtures, they've got Burnley at home on Saturday, which is a massive game for them. Then they've got Newcastle.
I don't think they'll beat Burnley either.
If they lose against Burnley and Newcastle, I think,
and Newcastle can beat them easily.
So we may be looking at another one.
I think Potter. I'd say he just shades it, and then if you're going to ask me for the third one once he gets sacked, then I'd say Bruce. Do you know what I mean?
I don't mean just quickly on Ollie. I know it changes all the time. Mentioned this on the show last night on the YouTube channel that I hadn't realised this. I should have done that. This is the worst start I'd have ever had to a Premier League season. Even Mourinho last year, we lost to Brighton and we lost to Spurs, but we beat Burnley and Chelsea. Leicester. So we had one more point than this stage. And, you know, it's an interesting month in relation to Leicester's tough, West Ham away is tough, Arsenal at home is tough, and then we finish with Newcastle away. So we conceivably could be doing this in the next international break with a worse 8-game start than what Mourinho had in the season he was sacked. He had 13 points. So Ollie's got to get a minimum of eight, just to level up with what
this, Mourinho had after this period of Premier League games, I know the Europa League's starting as well, and so is the Carling Cup, Carabao Cup, whatever. But this period of games for Ollie is massive, you know, and none of them are easy, you know, Mark, because, you know, let's just look at the Premier League, You got Leicester home, then you got West Ham away, then you got Arsenal home, then you got Newcastle away, then you got Liverpool home. It's tough. That's tough, mate. It's Liverpool at home, but
if we've got like 7, even if you get 7 points from the next 4, that's still 2 wins and a draw. I don't know where they come from, but conceivably, I think in the next international break we'll be mid-table. I fear we will be.
Mad.
Then you know you've got Liverpool straight after it, which you've got to say we're going to be underdogs no matter what. Man City and Spurs can't be far after that, and we're saying, oh, West Ham away is tough.
No, they're not, but they are for where we are.
Really tough. That's just the level of where we are. So you know, you've still got the likes of Everton to come. We've got to play teams like Watford, Spurs, Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool. You know. These games aren't tough that we've got coming
exactly.
up. Exactly.
I've just got the fixtures up in front of me, up until the 10th of November. And I'm saying to you, the only banker I'm saying is Brighton at home. Because in that time we've got Norwich away, we've got Bournemouth away, we've got Liverpool at home, we've got Newcastle away, Arsenal home, like I said, all the other games. Obviously, in between that, we've got Europa League. But in terms of Premier League, then we've got Sheffield United away. You never know. Like, it's just, you can't, the only banker I'm saying is Brighton at home. And that is what we signed ourselves up. Yeah,
if United beat Leicester on Saturday, then I fancy us to go and beat West Ham. I don't think Arsenal will beat us.
We always are.
I think we'll be up for that game. I don't think we'll beat them, but I think we get a point. You know, if we beat Leicester on Saturday, then I would say we could get 10 points from the next 4 games. Because I'd expect us to beat Newcastle and West Ham away, and I'd expect us to get a draw against Arsenal. And suddenly, all right, 15 points after 8 will not put us anywhere near top 4, I don't think. But it's
You asked me a hard question on the spot, and I didn't ask you one back. Yeah. I've got a question for you, So this is the situation. Right. It is now May the 12th. The season is over. Manchester United have finished 4th, And Pochettino has left Spurs. But we've just finished 4th with Ollie with this squad. We didn't buy anyone in January. Do you stay with Ollie or are you going all out for Pochettino?
Easy, 100% stick with Ollie. If he gets 4th place, we know... no January signings, then
what if he gets top six?
100%, yeah.
So he finishes sixth, which is where we expect him to finish with this team. But Pochettino does, but he finishes sixth by. Yeah, Greenwood didn't really get as much game time as he promised, and he carried on with Lingard and Rashford. But we finished sixth, and Pochettino's available.
I think it's all about levels, isn't it? I think that's borderline. I think anything below sixth, I would take Pochettino. I think if he gets sixth, it's still going to be we're still going to be back in Europa, aren't we? So you've got to have seen the progress. So if you're saying to me he's not really used the youth, but we finished sixth, he's still using Mata and Matic, I'm like. God, are we really moving? We've got to see progress this year. If we're not going to finish in the top four, you've got to.
I agree. I've said I don't mind writing off this season if I can see we're going in a clear direction for me, and I will stick by that. I'm not going to flip flop on that. I wouldn't sack Ollie if we finish fifth or sixth, because the team that we've got is a fifth or sixth best team. I don't mind that, because it could be lower. Be lower than that. It could be seventh or eighth. But for me, I'm not going to flip-flop. This is still how I feel now. Unless throughout the season he keeps showing me tactically inept decisions and rash decisions and wrong starting 11s and persistent with players who are bad, we're only four games in, about to be the fifth. So I'm still not going to change my opinion on I will keep Ollie no matter what, regardless of who becomes available, if I see us going in the right direction. And if he finishes any higher than fifth with this team, then fucking hell. He deserves a statue.
I'll throw it back at you then. So we are on Christmas Day morning. You're just about to open up your presents and you get a phone call from me saying, look at the league table. I don't know why you haven't looked at it yet. Probably irrelevant. We would have seen it. But we are 12th with the same sort of team he's been picking for the first four games. The same sort of yo-yo performances. And we are 12th. We are 20 points off fourth.
Yeah.
So we're not getting top four. The club are dropping stuff out into the media that we will sign players in January, but there's no guarantee we will.
Yeah.
And we're 12th, 20 points off fourth with the same sort of performances we've seen in the first four games. Do you stick with it?
No, you've got to make a change. He's got to go. Because that again, is being true to what I've said. The only way I would sack Ollie this year is if a massive capitulation happens where we're like really below mid-table / bottom. Do you know what I mean? Like an actual capitulation, 12th, 13th, 14th, these kind of positions. Because really, let's not get it twisted. Yes, we could potentially finish 7th or 8th, but let's face it, with the players that he's got, he should be able to finish 6th. Come on.
I said it at the start. He's got the fourth most expensive squad.
You can't. Like, don't get me wrong. If we do finish, say, seventh, but I could see we played Angel Gomez loads of games and he did the best with what he could do. Seventh is my cutoff point. I'll say that. Seventh is my cutoff. Any lower than seventh, and even seventh is like, fucking hell, mate. Are you sure? But I'll give you a go because you're Ollie. But if he drops less than that, nah, he can't.
I agree with you. I think that United fans have to make their own mind up. But as a United fan myself, I would be finding myself if we were at 12th at Christmas, and you would have United fans saying, you've got to give him time, you've got to give him time. I would say, why? Why are we giving him time? He's had a year. He's got a far better squad than Watford and Bournemouth, and yet he's below them after a year. I'd say, look, we should have seen it by now. The club won't sack him.
They will see it through. Even if we actually finish 12th, I don't think the club would sack him.
Yeah, well, and that's an issue for the fans about the ownership. I've said my piece, and all these people who say, "Oh, United stand to get the board changed." Yeah, dream on. That's not one. I wouldn't do it because we're not a dictatorship, and two, I wouldn't even know how we would do it. It's beyond fan power, to be honest. It is. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm sure we will revisit that. I'm just going to give an exclusive bit of news as well. The United Stand Christmas party is going to be on the 5th of December in Manchester. So if you are thinking of coming over or coming up, or you live in the Manchester
love
area,
that.
Get that in your diary. 5th of December, Thursday, the 5th of December. We haven't got the location sorted yet. Well, we have, but we're not going to tell you that yet. But it's the 5th of December, and it will be good. I know you're a bit DJ and flex, but I will insist. a bit of Slade.
For this one, I might even let other people do it. Actually, I don't want to do any DJing this time. I want to enjoy that. It'll be a couple of days after my birthday as well. Actually, so yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. And the first one was such a success, man. It'd be good to do a Christmas get together, especially in different locations, and we can start building it out, man, and just going all over the country. Yeah, exactly.
It'd be nice to do it in Manchester for Christmas, which is why people are, why did you do the first one in London? Because we always plan to do the Christmas one, the first one in Manchester. So it will be good. And that's an exclusive for the podcast.
Love that.
So
and just on the podcast, just quickly before you move on, man, I'm really enjoying this. I am really enjoying this. It's refreshing. It's different. And the response that we got last week, man, I mean, look, over 15,000 listens in one for our first ever one. Like, it's just fantastic. And the response from everyone tweeting us, letting us know what you've been listening on and where you're listening and stuff like that. It's just sick. So good. So good. And we're just going to keep evolving this. It's brilliant.
Yep. I'm definitely enjoying it as well. It flies by.
Yeah.
I think we've done the hour, so we may as well wrap up there. Very well, and also to do our first two in the international break, it's never easy, but it's flown by. So I imagine, you know, when there are actually games going on, it's going to be a lot more to talk about. But I do like taking it outside of United.
Absolutely.
As well, the discussion. I think that's good. So, that's enough from me. So, get on the YouTube channel, of course. We're still live every night at 8 o'clock. Flex and Rants shows are up, previews and everything, fan cams.
Absolutely. Same. And I've got another super fan chat coming up with KG the Comedian as well. You guys quite enjoyed the first one I done with Reese from the band Everyone You Know. And just a bit of background about that. We're just going to talk to Manchester United fans who are in and around the industry of music, arts, acting, radio presenting, whatever, that you might see on your TV screens as something else, but we want to bring them closer to you guys and you guys closer to them, so that by the end of these videos you can look at it and say, do you know what, I'm just a Manchester United fan like them, they're just a Man United fan like me, they're feeling the same pain that we're feeling. So look out for that video on Friday as well as we continue that series.
Thanks everyone for watching and
listening.
We'll speak to you soon.
Brilliant. Love that. Oh, hold on. Let me stop my recording.